Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Welcome to Sports In Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. Now, I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports In Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul of the Channel. Sports In Depth is the show. We always open up. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day, praying that always your will and way guide us, lead us, strengthen us. More importantly, Lord, give us not what we want, what we need. We need thee every hour. We thank you for the little things we so largely take for granted. And Lord, we thank you for blessings forthcoming, have come, and all unmerited. You are God, and you're God all by yourself. And you may not be everybody's God, but you are God. And we thank you. As that man once said, although we do not live on Park Avenue, by the grace of God, we don't live on a park bench. We ask you to bless our family and friends, dear Lord. As Valentine's Day is forthcoming, the greatest love of all is betrayed by you. Your darling son Jesus here, that we may have the right to the tree of life. We thank you for all things, Father God, and we ask you to bless us all our blessings. In your darling son Jesus, amen. Doc Stanley, Sports Dev on the Blake Radio Network, main boss on the channel, Sports Dev of the show. When I got it, it is a special show. A segment I'm beginning. Mel Smith Jr., Little Mel Coco, Cassell gave me the idea, and as you know, Doc Stanley Sports is the website. That I forgot about mentioning on the shows too. I'll put it on the next show. DocStanleySports.com is the website. And this idea was another one. It was spurned by Mel Smith Jr., a.k.a. Rooney, a.k.a.
And I'm indeed here, good doctor.
Little Coco, Mel Gasell, you know, and it was you calling the doctor. So this is a combination of calling the doctor when I got it, and we were just chatting, found some time here. So for the next 45 minutes, we're going to talk about my Sports In Depth collection. Mel was asking some questions, and was just all...
Yeah, I have another question, Doc.
Good one.
And I'm glad that we can have this time. Like I said, every time I talk to you, I feel like I'm getting my master's and graduating cum laude.
I appreciate that, Rooney.
Thank you, Doc. No, seriously, Doc. You know, it's funny that I heard you mentioning the collection and, DocStanleySports.com. And, you know, I got to tell you, Doc, having seen your incredible collection, I'm just saying to me, it seems like you have a bat from every hitter that ever mattered in baseball, a ball from every pitcher that ever mattered, a football or some spikes from every football player that ever mattered, a pair of sneakers, a basketball, shorts, or something from every basketball player that ever mattered, and a pair of boxing gloves, mouthpiece, or autographed photos from every professional boxer that ever mattered.
Look, what a tremendous compliment. And, you know, all praise, first and foremost, goes to the master, my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. It's funny you mentioned it. The first bat that I ever got for my collection is one of those things, and, you know, how I got it. Jim Rice. Jim Rice was near the end of his career. Jim Rice is the only player, right-handed batter in the 20th century, with the exception of Lou Brock, that had a three-year period where he averaged, Rooney, 200 hits, okay, 100 scored runs, over 100 scored runs, over 100 RBIs, okay, a 300 batting average, okay, 12 triples, 25 doubles, and 40 home runs. Only him and Lou Brock, Lou Gehrig, ever did this in the history of baseball and in the 20th century. And I was just befounded.
Those are incredible numbers, Doc.
I remember telling Jose Canseco that, because when Jose went to Boston, I had one of Jim's cards, and I said Jose, because Jose was a good little buddy of mine. We were talking. I said, look at these numbers, man. And I'll never forget what Jose Canseco said. He said, man, Jim did some polling. And he said, let's go up and talk to him. And we went over and talked to the great Jim Wright. Jim Wright was the batting coach. One of the few times where you had the right guy as the batting coach. And Jim was the batting coach. And I just looked at his numbers. And what was amazing, that this guy, in a way, became the Jackie Robinson of African-Americans in the Hall of Fame, in the fact that he's the first African-American player to make it in the Hall of Fame on in his last year eligibility. Yeah, that's the word. Eligibility. The first player to ever do was Red Ruffin. Red Ruffin, the Yankee pitcher. The second player was Ralph Kiner. In his last year eligibility, and I was just befuddled that a guy with those kind of numbers, the guy who hit the most home runs in his era, the guy who had the most RBIs of his era, the guy who won the MVP, actually should have won two, took 15 years. And I remember the incident, and Dave Righetti was pitching. And speaking of Righetti, I have a pair of his spikes. There's not a finer human being that walks the earth than Dave Righetti. And I remember the last time I was that day, we were sitting there in the coach's locker room, and he was saying some things to me that I knew he was saying to me because he saw me as a confidant and a friend. And they tell the story of Bob Trainer, one of the legendary radio guys in New York City, was having dinner one night someplace, and it was a lady, and the waitress walked over and said, excuse me, sir, when you leave, just see me. Your tab has been picked up by the gentleman across the room. And he looked up, and there's Dave Righetti, who was the first Yankee to throw no-hitter since Don Larson had done the perfect game no-hitter back in the 56 World Series when he threw his no-hitter on the 4th of July. And Righetti is now went down to the bullpen, sacrificed a Hall of Fame career said by many to go help the Yankees in the bullpen in the days where a relief pitcher pitched two or three innings. And Righetti is in, and Rice hits this broken bat single that drives in the winning run. And I go into the locker room after the game, and I see Jim now. Jim he's fixing his belt on his pants. He's got one of those what they call his white beaters. He's getting dressed. And I said, Jim, could I have that bat you just cracked? And he said, hey, man, I don't care, man. But you better go ahead and get it. He said, give me a throw it away. And sure enough, I looked around. Lou, the clubhouse boy, is rolling the bat out here getting ready to throw it away. And Jim gave it to me, and he autographed it for me. And it's one of the mini bats that I have. Barry, you know, you talked about the home run. You know, me and Barry became friends way back in his Pittsburgh days. It's just one of those things where he befriended me, all by the grace of God. And I remember I have three of Barry's bats, and I have one as a Pittsburgh Pirate and two as a San Francisco Giant. The one with the most intriguing story, Doc Stanley Sports, and that's on the Blake Radio Network. DocStanleySports.com is the site. When I got it, and talking about items that I have in my Sportsman Beer Collection. This will be a weekly show now. Mel will call in. And for those of you listening, DocStanleySports.com, go online, look at the site. You like something, you can contact me. It's authentic. It's real. It's a situation where, as the outstanding photographer, Jonathan Cain, said, you know, Doc, he says, when did you realize how much stuff you had? And I said, well, about 3 weeks ago when I started packing this stuff. And, he said, but, you know, the amazing thing about your stuff, Doc, is nothing here did you ever remotely think about selling. This was all personal stuff. As a great Marion Boykin once said to his son Brandon, who we want to say happy birthday to Marion Boykin, who was his birthday yesterday, and his son Brandon's birthday was the 2nd of February. He has another son on the 16th, and Marion has a great line. He said, from January 1st, which is his wife's birthday, till the end of February, everybody in his household has a birthday, including the dog.
Something about just quickly in regard to Marion Boykin, not only an overall all-around great sports
human being,
obviously just a great human being, Not only a sports expert in many rights, but a boxing phenom, as you know.
Great boxing mind of our time. I'm right there with Art Russ. You know, working on boxing was the greatest boxing show in the history of television, be it cable, be it internet. You know, everybody and anybody was on the legendary working on boxing. I remember it was really so much the segue, the conduit that enhanced my friendship with Leroy Neiman, because Leroy was a devout Marion Boykin disciple. Max Cullerman will tell you, he's a Boykin disciple. You know, he tells you he cut the TV on, and so what Marion was doing, it inspired him and motivated him. And, you know, anybody and everybody has been on Boykin. I was up at the legendary, I got to call my friend John B., up at the legendary Cotton Club. And David Allen Greer was there this particular night, Black Tie Affair. And me and David are talking. They say, "How you doing?" Hey. He said, "So, you know, what are you doing here?" I said, "Well, I'm retired police officer, and I used to co-host a boxing show. Among other things, I'm still doing it, working on boxing." His face lit up. He said, "Working on boxing?" He said, "When I lived in New York City, I watched Working on Boxing every Monday. Working on Boxing came on 4 p.m. on Mondays, and we came on again at 10 o'clock on Fridays." We had. I remember when I was having a conversation with your good buddy, Michael Tyson. Is that Michael Gerard Tyson? And as Bert Sugar said last week. And I remember we were talking, and somehow inadvertently, Mike thought I had said that he didn't know who Boykin, and Mike let me know emphatically that he, I know Marion Boykin. He's a friend of mine, you know. And Marion had said one time when his son, they were out somewhere, and they said, "You know, I see these people buying." He said, "Doc has all this stuff at his house." He said, and you know, and it's stuff given to him. We had done a Boykin on Boxing show of my apartment, and he said it was one of the most viewed and popular shows. Barry.
And another one, Doctor, that you did that was one of the greatest hours of television, and specifically sports television, ever. And I mean ever. You and Marion and yourself had done a live Boykin on Boxing from Madison Square Garden. And the participants and of this show, outside of YouTube stars, yourself and Marion, happened to be Don King, the inflammable Don King, versus that great dancer and entertainer, MC Hammer. And it seems as though I think that Hammer was there on behalf of a support of Holyfield about something. And Doc was, I don't know if it was Tony TNT Tucker or I can't remember exactly what fighter that is basically they're representing.
It was TNT.
Tony TNT Tucker. And Doc, one of the great verbal sparring matches of all time. I can specifically remember Hammer telling Don needling Hammer, and Hammer coming back to Don with, "Well, I understand we have two press conferences. Yours is at 9 o'clock tonight, and mine is at, like, I think it's at, like, mine is like 9 a.m. tomorrow. I'll come to yours, you come to mine." I mean, Doc, it was just tremendous, tremendous television. Unbelievable television. The great legendary Don King and MC Hammer.
Thanks, so much. Boykin, you know, the thing about Boykin on Boxing, Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Vita Network, when I got it, our special segment on my sports collection, DocStanleySports.com. You know, Marion did Boykin on Boxing with the mindset of hosting and showcasing a gentleman by the name of Roger St. James. You know, it's that old story of Willie Pep getting hurt and demand, and Garrick just going to, you know, substitute for a game or two, and we know what happened. John Condon told a great story. John Francis Xavier Condon, the great PR man at Madison Square Garden, and the president talked about the story about the announcer for the Knick game hadn't showed up. He said, "John, could you do us a favor? The guy's going to be here in about 15, 20 minutes, you know, but we need you to start the game. So, you know, could you do the game? And like I said, when he comes, he'll take over. And John said, yeah, I'm still looking over my shoulder like 30-something years later. The guy still haven't showed up. And, you know, Marion was showcasing Roger St. James, and that sort of situation came about, too. And, you know, but the amazing thing, I mean, talent stands on its own merit. And, you know, if you can't sing, I don't care what kind of equipment you have, if you're not fast, you can't. And Marion did work on boxing in his apartment using the microwave as his timer, and is the greatest piece of boxing vision, video, television in history of mankind. I mean, everybody, I mean, Marion said, Doc, you know, when you came on that show, you kind of, you know, took it to another level. It was just that Marion got busy. And it just shows you the kind of human being he was. Here's a guy with the number one boxing show on the planet. And he turns and says, hey, Doc, you know what, man, I'm doing? Hey, Doc, could you help me out with it? Boom. And he knew what he was doing. And I tell you, working on boxing, there was not a day, there was not a week that I would walk down the streets of New York City, the most famous city in the world, and somebody, hey, Doc, working on boxing. Somebody would always acknowledge the fact that they had seen. But there was a guy at the Knick games. He would come over to me, and we were not talking basketball. We were talking boxing. You know, it was just the greatest boxing show, tremendous opportunity. Again, one of the many blessings from the good Lord. And it allowed me avenues to, it was Roy Jones Jr. who Marion brought to the forefront. And in the Sports and Deaf Trust in God Hall of Fame, I have two pair of Roy Jones Jr.'s trunks. I have some, Lady A was just stunned that I had actual hand wraps, you know, from Marion, from Roy Jones Jr., as I have actual hand wraps from Mike Tyson. I have one of the hand wraps in the first fight that Mike Tyson ever had in Madison Square Garden. My son, Mel Jr., was with me that night, and we went into the dressing room, and he asked Mel, he said, hey, you know, Mel met him, shook hands, he says, you know, you want to be a sports writer like your dad, and they talked. And he gave me one of the raps. I have one of his raps. I have Lennox Lewis raps. I have Buddy McGirt. I have Roy Jones Jr., Hector Camacho. I have Yvonne Calderon. Also Miguel Cotto. It's a collection that as I'm starting to document it now, I see how just blessed I've been by God.
And it's never-ending, Doc. It's a never-ending collection.
Well,
honestly, when I first saw your collection, you know something, Doc, and you know, seriously speaking, it's like, you know, now that you're documenting, you know, all the incredible mementos, you know, that you have from, you know, if you were, like you said, to tag and document all of the different artifacts you have from all the Hall of Famers, and all of the various sports, baseball and basketball and football and boxing, you would have more autographed things in the way of pitchers and sneakers and baseballs and bats and footballs and spikes than basically anyone that I could even think of. You have more stuff from more Hall of Famers than any person that I can possibly think of.
Well, like I said, all grace to the master and the opportunity of being here, and it's the thing of it's you know, it was stuff, you know, not only when I got it, but they gave it to me. And you know, you talk about that, and you know, the authenticity. Somebody says, you know, Doc, you know, a buddy of mine was saying, you know, Doc, you know, Dad, you got so much stuff, and you know, you have to get it authenticated. I said, I don't have to get it authenticated. I said, I've got a press pass that said I was ringside at Madison Square Garden. You know, I got a press pass that said I was at the World Series. You know, I got a press pass that said I was set courtside at the New York. I don't need to. And you find these other places, these so-called organizations of renown and credibility, and then you read stories 2-3 years later that they were frauds. I remember Barry Harper. And Barry was a buddy of mine. Met him through the great legendary Art Rush Jr. And there was a Old Timers Day at Yankee Stadium, and Art Rush Jr. introduced me to Joe DiMaggio, and he said, "Joe, this is my friend Doc. Doc, this is Joe DiMaggio." And Joseph Paul DiMaggio went around the corner to do Art's show, The Art of Baseball. And as I'm standing in front of the locker room, Now, you know how you're just standing and talking, and you see somebody come toward you, and they stopped, and I looked up, and he smiled on at me. And Joseph Pauly said, "Hey, it was very nice to meet you." And, you know, it's a, well, we became friends. I remember another old times day, we were looking for Mr. DiMaggio, and Barry was there, and it proved that Barry's, you know, stuff was forged. But I said, "Barry, you know, well, could you get that Mr. DiMaggio?" He said, "Okay, I'll give it to Joe. I'll have him sign it for you." And about a week or two later, I saw Barry. "Hey, Doc, oh, I got that picture for you." And he came over. "Here you go, Doc." I said, "Thanks, Barry." He said, "Yeah." He said, "Doc, incidentally, let me tell you something, Doc." He said, "You know what? That was the only thing that Joe would sign on Old Timers, that he would sign nothing else but your
picture." And you, Doc, I happen to know that that's a fact, because for many, many, many a moon, Joe DiMaggio had a reputation for not being a guy given to signing a whole lot of autographs or memorabilia
Don
or anything
told me
like that.
That, you know, when I told Don, we were talking one day, and I told him, he said, "What?" He said, "Man, Joe won't sign anything." They said Matt, he thought the opening day ball, I think, to Matt Noakes. And you know, Matt caught the ball and came out and said, you know, when he signed it. And he thought Joe didn't hear him. And I heard that Joe became that way because one time he went to see Mr. Steinbrenner, and they had Joe waiting outside in an ordinary amount of time, and Joe kind of made him pay for it. Doc Stanley Sports and Depth, when I got it, the show, talking about my sports collection with Mel Smith Jr., it will be a continuing show. Real quickly, salute to Black History Month. Let's do some Black History Baseball. The first African-American in baseball, Jack Roosevelt Robinson, who also became the first African-American to win a batting title and an MVP in 1949. He was not only the first African-American to win the Rookie of the Year award, but the first man ever. In 1947, Larry Doby became the first African-American to lead the league in home runs and RBIs in 1948, and the first African-American to win a World Series, as the Cleveland Indians won the World Series in 48.
And the first African-American, Doc, also, I believe, in the entire American League.
Oh, yeah, well, he was. He was the first African-American, first black player in the American League. I remember Mr. Doby telling me something I'll never forget. Me and the great Larry Hardesty, greatest African-American sportscaster in the history of New York City radio. And I remember we were talking, and he said he remembered the day clearly, you know, when he joined the team and introduced each player. He said, and he would go to each block, and he would stick his hand out. He said, and some stuck their hand out to shake it, and some didn't. I'll never forget Mr. Doby telling me that. Some stuck their hand out to shake it, and some didn't. It's not wrong you say that. It's wrong you say that. I'm going through, as you know, DocSandySports.com is the site. Check it out. Get to us, and we'll get to you. You know, Fortaleza, Brazil is where I plan to be next year this time. And in doing so, around my property, they call the museum, and it really is. I just kind of just reside here. I really don't live here. And I was moving some stuff, and I said, I got a baseball back here. Let me see this baseball. I said, oh, wow, I'm looking at the baseball. I have it in case, and I'm looking at some of the autographs. I said, oh, wow, that's Lou Brock. Lou Brock, Bob Gibson, Billy Williams, another Rookie of the Year winner. And I said, oh, well, here's Bob Feller. Got a chance to meet Mr. Feller on a couple of occasions. Bob Feller. There's Tom Seaver. There's Brooks Robinson. You know what I mean? I see Bill White on here. Here's Johnny Bench. Johnny Bench. I got Johnny Bench on here. Larry Doby is here. Warren Spahn, the winningest left-hand pitcher in history of baseball. Who's this on the sweet spot of the ball? Let me take a look over here. Who's this? Joseph Ball, the Magic.
Joseph Ball.
All on one baseball. If you put a value on this ball, knowing that Billie Holiday said, "You're not famous in America till you're dead," you know, Mr. Doby has passed away. Mr. Spahn has passed away. Mr. DiMaggio has passed away. But you look at Lou Brock, who set the one season stolen base record to surpass by Ricky Henderson. He has 3,000 hits. He's the first ballot Hall of Famer. Brooks Robinson, considered the greatest defensive third baseman of all time. Johnny Bench, in some minds, the greatest catcher of all time. Bob Feller. I mean, Bob Feller threw, this is an amazing stat. He's the only guy that threw opening day no-hitter. Bob Feller had 11 one-hitters. Imagine that.
That's amazing,
11
Doc. 11 one-hitters.
I mean, just go half of that And that's six no-hitters. And you add that to, I think he had two, three other great. Yeah, he's the only guy to throw an opening day no-hitter. Rapid
you know, Doc,
Robin.
This is show how awesome your collections of things were, and not just in the various sports, but also sports entertainment. I remember, tell me if you remember this, Doc, I'll be brief. I remember us being at a wrestling convention at Madison Square Garden, actually. And it was, I think, the day before one of the WrestleManias. So we're over there kind of poking around, actually kind of covering it a little bit. I think Mary Hardesty had wanted me to get something anyway. And obviously you were there with me, thanks to the grace of you getting us the proper credentials. And I remember, Doc, all of my heroes, basically the bad guys, the youngster Georgiano Steele and the Bushwhackers and Nikolai Volkoff and running into all of these guys. And I remember, Doc, you saying, you had wanted to get one of the legendary manager's autographs for your incredibly lovely daughter, Demony. And I turn around, and who do I see chatting with Captain Lou Albano and the great villain, classy Freddie Blassie, than you?
Lou,
with the Hall of Fame managers.
I have Undertaker's autograph, but what had happened was Lou had came to, in fact, he'd come to Boston Celtic game, and I had Demony with me. And I saw him. I said, "Oh yeah, whoa, she's so lovely." He said, "Oh my goodness." And he took the picture, and he autographed the picture with me. The thing about Madison Square Garden, basketball wise, you just never knew who you're going to run into sitting court. Peter Falk was a big Knicks fan, Columbo, and I got a chance to meet him on so I got a nice autograph picture. Got a chance to meet him on several occasions, and you just never. I remember Don Mattingly sitting courtside. At a Knick game, Winfield, especially them being Yankee players, but you just anybody and everybody could show up, especially when they became more of a celebrity, had more of a celebrity role, where they in fact kind of designated a certain area. John McEnroe had courtside seats at him and his former lovely wife Tatum O'Neal, who's the youngest person ever to win an Oscar, and his dad would be there. They had the whole McEnroe section, and we'd be sitting there. Me and McEnroe big boxing. We're talking boxing. People think we're talking basketball. We're sitting there talking boxing. He was a tremendous football player. I'm talking about soccer in high school. And I remember a story I'm telling. After the game, and you've been here, when you know how you walk down to the locker room, and as you walk toward the locker room, there's a door, and sometimes the door will be open, or somebody will open the door for you. So at this particular game, we're walking, all the press we're going to, and as we get to the locker room, the door automatically opens, which means somebody's holding the door. So we all walk in. So I stop just to take a look who's holding the door. I think maybe it's one of the ball boys or something. No, it's the greatest offensive end in the history of pro football. Jerry Rice is opening the door for us. I said, what are you doing here? You know, he laughed, you know what I mean? And he signed the cap for me. I looked at him, and we laughed. And he was doing a show that you just never know. I remember a game during the playoffs, and the great Irving Magic Johnson, and I see him sitting down. I just go over to say hello. And he's sitting there, and some people come over, and he said, no, not right now, not right now. So I said, excuse me, Mr. Johnson, could I get an autograph? He says, hey, man, I'm not signed. Hey, man, hey, no, it's you. Come on over here. He started laughing. And he said, I'll take a picture with us, man. And the young lady that we took a picture with, the photographer comes over, it's me, the great Irving Magic Johnson, and Madonna, you know, sitting there at courtside, you know, just going over to say hi. And Irving, hey man, I didn't know it was you. You're so blessed, and you thank God when a nobody like myself and these kind of, and Irving is such a wonderful one. I always call him Irving. He's a wonderful, wonderful human being, and what he's done for other people. I remember when the Nets were playing the Lakers for the championship, and I see him coming down the steps of toward courtside, and I say, hey Irving, how you doing? I say, hey man, how you doing? I said, Irvin, can I get an autograph? He said, man, every time you see me, you ask me for an autograph. I said, Irvin, I don't see you that much. He said, hey, man, he said, look, if you didn't ask me, I'd be disappointed.
Hey, and you know something, Doc? You're being really modest about this. This nobody stuff. Not only were you somebody, but one of I remember being in Madison Square Garden, obviously because of you, giving out credentials and whatnot, and being down toward the visiting locker room, down by the not too far from the next locker room, and I remember walking in with you, and Charles Barkley immediately saying, "Oh, Dr. Sneakers, Doc, my goodness, I'm trying to move out and pay an autograph sneakers for you, Doc. Oh, man, I don't know if I bought them, but I give you my word." We come back here, I think he said that because I had another road trip to the Garden in like a month or so. He's like, "Doc, you have my word that I will have those of you signed, sealed, and delivered when we get back here."
Charles Barkley is just one of the greatest human beings. And, you know, and all that came about, like I said, because Charles had seen that I had a relationship with Julius Erving. You know, show me your friends, I show you. And Charles, and he also liked the idea that, you know, we started talking boxing with boxing guys. You know, and it's a known fact. Charles Barkley is one of the 50 greatest, but one of the seven greatest fighters that ever lived, and very candid guy. And Charles Barkley was a guy that always shot it straight from African-American perspective, you know, who talked the talk, walked the walk, who called the way it was, who stood up for the other black players. And I remember, you know, if Charles gave you his word was his word. And I remember Charles, the first pair of sneakers I got for Charles, they had played the best 3 out of 5 Knicks. He's coming out the locker room with Lump, who's the equipment guy, and he's complaining to Lump about one of the latches on the front of the sneakers that broke off. And I walk over, joking, I said, "Charles," I said, "Man, you're a superstar. You can't wear those sneakers." I said, "Man, you might as well get them. Just autograph me, let me have them. You can't wear them no more. You're a superstar. You can't wear them with a missing Lump, you know." Him and Lump look at me. Charles signs them, and he gives them to me. And I remember another pair he had given me, and he was with I had given him a Leroy Neiman post autographed by Leroy, and, which I owed him for all the great things he did for me, and Buddy McGirt and Colonel Whitaker were going to be fighting at the Garden. And he said, "Well, look, you know," in this particular time, he said, "You know what? These sneakers I need, but I'll send you a pair." And then he said, "You know what? Hey, take these now," which is right. I mean, you got enough pair. But he just showed you what he thought of. And I remember the All-Star game in 1997. And a guy came up to him and asked him to autograph a card. And Charles said, I don't sign cards." And I had a card, and when I heard that, I just forget about it. Here's my friend, you don't sign. And they came in to play the Nets. And in the locker room, I saw him signing some cards. I said, I thought you don't sign cards." He said, I sign cards for friends." I said, "Oh, man." I said, "You know, I had a card at the All-Star game." He said, "Well, go get the card. You got it?" You know what I mean? Kevin Johnson, KJ. Wears number 7 because it's God's number of perfection. And I remember the first time he came in, and I said, "Hey, Kevin, can I put this in my collection?" He said, "Well, I need these." He said, "But you know what? Give me your name and address, and I'll mail you a pair." And sure enough, 2 weeks later, there was a pair of sneakers from the great KJ. And it's the stories, and I want to thank you so much for doing this, because you bring this out. And it's what Steve Glazer and the Honorable Susan Mendoza said. "You know, Doc, it's not so much that you have it. It's how and when you got it and the stories that go with it, as these stories that you are making me bring forth." And it's just, you know, it's just bringing back memories, and it shows, you know, these things are special to me. I've been looking for the longest time to house it in different schools and colleges, which you still can. But, you know, this I just was, you know, it shows these little remote things that are insignificant, shows how I have been blessed by God in so many other ways: health, strength, friends like you, Rooney, that this whole posse.
Well, let me thank you, Doc, and I appreciate everything that you've done. Let me just take a moment to tell the fans how much, you know, I owe to you. I remember being trying to make the transition from amateur wrestling, trying to break into the pros, and getting my head handed to me by by those big monsters on a daily basis trying to break in. And I remember thinking, this is very, very, very painful, what I'm attempting to do. And quite frankly, I would love to try to break into sportscasting and broadcasting, because I know it would be so much easier on the body than this could ever be.
You know, Rooney, you know what? I have a story. You know, you're talking about that, because it was Marion Boykin that brought you to the forefront, and I think you have a copy of that story. You know, next time we do this show, I'm going to pull that story out. And we did a story in the Beacon introducing you. And,
indeed, I still have that newspaper, Doc.
Okay, and you know, you ran, you ran with the ball. I remember Doc Stanley Sports in Depth when I got it, a special segment about my collection. I remember us sitting ringside at the Lennox Lewis Ray Mercer fight, comforting Mrs. Lennox Lewis as her son was fighting, and we assured her that not only was he all right, but that he was going to win the fight. It just shows you, Rooney, like, you just never know who you're sitting to. You never get a second chance to make a first impression. And you know what? I've got to get back to how we started, is the Barry Bonds bat. You know, Barry, 700, the all-time home run king, oldest man to win a batting championship, the only man in the National League, well, no, the first man in the National League to do 40-40, the only man in baseball history with over, I believe it's 500 stolen bases and 500 home runs. The man with the one-season record for walks, he walked 231 times.
You know, it's funny that you should say that, Doc, because I was going to ask you about this. Watching Barry, Doc, believe it or not, of all the things that I was impressed with, wasn't just the home runs and the long balls and what have you. But, Doc, like you said, I remember one year I specifically paid a lot of attention to Barry. I think that's when he was going for the home run time. Doc, like you said, I think that's the year in which you were speaking. Doc, I remember being so shocked that they literally wouldn't pitch to him.
Well,
when
not only that,
up,
you know, Chris Chambers talked,
Doc,
about how Barry, you know, because Barry choked up on the bat, too. I remember Eddie Murray, the great Eddie Murray, whose birthday is the 24th of this month, as we continue to salute Black History Month. Eddie Murray, only switch hitter in history of baseball, over 500 home runs, 500 doubles, 3,000 base hits. Eddie, and we were talking, like me and you were talking one day, and Eddie just typed, he said, you know, Mel, Barry only sees two strikes a game, and he's right on him. Buck Showalter walked over the base loaded one time. I had a 4-2 lead, bases loaded, no problem. Walked Barry, it's 4-3, next guy got out. Next day, Barry hit a home run, and you know, Buck said, I rest my case. Barry was always very, very kind, very nice to me. You know, we were friends, you know, and he told me some things that, you know, that friends tell other people. I remember, like, as I said, at the batting cage, he cracked a bat. I asked his dad, Bobby Bonds, the man who did 30 more in the history of baseball. And he said, ask Barry. And I said, Barry, I said, could I have the bat you cracked? And he looked down at me like, whoa, man, that's Doc's bat. And just walked right over, grabbed the bat, and handed it to me as if it was my bat, as if this was the thing to do. I said, oh, my goodness, how could I not think about giving that crack back to Doc?
Doc, I have to mention this before we go off the air. Otherwise, I'd be remiss. Excuse me for cutting you off, but I have to mention it. I come home one day, as I usually did. I'm coming from the gym, and I'm rushing to hear the great Arthur George Rush Jr. show, Arthur Rush Jr. Sports Talk, on another network. And lo and behold, Doc, as I'm hearing him introducing one of his guests, who is it but Mel Doc Stanley was on the show. I'm like, oh, my goodness, two legends, Doc on Arthur George Rush Jr. I'm like, two bona fide legends.
That was a show that he had. Well, you know what? I don't know. I thought, because one time he had both me and Marion on his show, and he always called Mel Doc. And I've got a sports talk with Mel Doc. And I told me some things that were profound, and he told me. Then Art told me something that was stunning. Art told me that he never thought there would be a black baseball player. Never thought they'd be. And I never got a chance to meet Mr. Robinson. I saw Mr. Robinson play as a youth. I met his lovely wife. I have an autographed picture by Mrs. Jackie Robinson. But he told me he never thought there'd be a black baseball player. And it was Arthur who started the friendship with Mr. DiMaggio, because Mr. DiMaggio would always call. Mr. DiMaggio, Art Russ said hello, and he would always say, "Is Arthur here?" Always called Art. Arthur, is Arthur here? And I just remember that he was always so kind. I have a boxing jacket that I'd say is a $1 million boxing jacket. We're going to talk about that. Maybe what we'll do is a segment we'll do just strictly. I working with Don. Don had hired me knowing that I was a police officer. So I took some time off and worked with Tony Tucker, and we got these one-of-a-kind boxing jackets. And I decided to have the jacket autographed inside the gloves, and Jose Torres signed on the sleeve. That worked out for me. Boy, the steps of a righteous man are ordered. And I was down in Atlantic City, and I saw Mr. DiMaggio. In fact, he wound up sitting in my seat at ringside with Bert Sugar. And I told him, Art said hello, and right away, is Arthur here? And then he was signing autographs, and I said, Mr. DiMaggio, would you put one on my jacket for me? And he smiled at me, put it on, and he says, and that's a good one. And I remember he was at Old Time, a special affair, and I went down to see him, but he wound up sitting down. And in the process, I didn't see him, so I thought he was out on the field. And when I came back upstairs, one of the PR guys at the time came and said, hey, he said, Doc, you know Joe DiMaggio, huh? I looked at him and said, yeah, you know. I was thinking why he said, because you know what? When you walked past him, he looked at you and looked at us and said, hey, where's that guy going? He must not have saw me. And he was right. I didn't see him because I was looking for him. When he sat down in the chair, I inadvertently thought he'd walked out on the field. But it was Art Russ that introduced me to him. Art Russ was my third mentor in radio. The late Dr. Frank Bannister was my first mentor. The legendary Hal Jackson was my second mentor, who Mr. Jackie Robinson, the very thing in radio. And Art Russ Jr., who brought Sports Talk into being, was my third mentor. I have definitely some autographed pictures with Art. Mr. DiMaggio, I have an autographed picture. I tried to do unique things. And in the year of Jackie Robinson's 5th anniversary, 1997, they had a special event at the Museum of Natural History. And when I got over there, Tip said Charles and Frank Robinson, they gave us a ball with a Jackie Robinson autograph on it. And I said, I'm going to take this ball and try to get as many people who played with and against Jackie on that ball. And I got Yogi Berra's on that ball, Joe DiMaggio's on that ball, Billy Martin's on that ball, Carl Erskine's on that ball, Pee Wee Rice's. I tried to do unique things. These were things that I never saw as a remuneration. I saw these as the uniqueness in it, as something to sit back and first give all praise and honor to God and my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and to turn around and also show the profound effect of African-Americans, and also the friendships I've made with some of the greatest human beings ever walked the earth. John Starks, one of the great guys.
Now, tremendous guy, John Starks.
I remember going down to when I worked in Arizona to work with Don King, and I'm walking to this club, and I'm looking around, and I hear a voice, hey, man, what are you doing here? Come on over here. It's Barry Lamar Bonds. I'm looking for Barry, and Barry finds me. And just some of the stories that are part of when I got it. But we're going to have to close here. And, Mel, we're going to come back next year. I want to thank you for actually bringing this thing about. And I remember
Doctor. It's always a pleasure.
Pleasure's on mine. In the Knicks locker room, I'm standing there playing the Bulls, and I feel somebody tap my shoulder and say hello as they're walking past. It's none other than Michael Jeffrey Jordan. We're going to do this again. Rooney, I want to thank you so much, and I just want to leave you with three thoughts. Life knows the system. Most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Service to others is the rent you pay for your room on earth. Son of Man came to serve and not be served. Doc Stanley, Sports and Death.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Rooney, we'll do this again next week. And somewhere down the line, I have to find some of that Urban Rose stuff for you. Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel. Sports and Death is the show. And DocStanleySports.com is the site. And thanks for being with us. Trust in God.